Right now, it's time for Armed American Radio's Daily Defense with Mark Walters.
It is. Welcome to Armed American Radio's Daily Defense. I'm Mark Walters, filling your prescription for freedom today and every day here in these Crossbreed Holster studios. A great program for you today, something we've never done before, and we'll get to that in just a second. First, what party wants your guns? Go ahead. You can say it. That's right. The Democrat Party wants your guns. Two headlines today that to those of us who pay attention to this type of thing are not surprised at, not shocked at. Disturbed, maybe, might be a better descriptive there for what I'm about to read you. I am not going to spend any time talking about it today. I will get into this in serious detail on the Sunday Monster broadcast. But what party wants your guns? The hypocrisy and lies oozing from the progressive America haters, the un-Americans, now requires toilet paper to clean up the mess. The modern Democrat Party grandstanding like I've never seen. Well, I have seen it before. I can't say I've never seen it before. But two headlines up on Drudge that we will be addressing on the Sunday program from Phoenix, Arizona. Armed guards protect Senate Democrats as they demand new gun control laws. And from the Washington Post today, Obama seriously considering circumventing Congress. Is that a shock to you? It is not a shock to me. More on that on Sunday. But today we're going to put that away. Where in the world is Mark now? Where are the Crossbreed Holster Studios? I'm going to let a special guest who's going to stay with me for the hour answer that question for me because I ran into him a number of years ago. He's an imposing character, someone you don't want to meet when he's in a bad mood, Mr. Doc Holliday, because I am where, Doc? It's a pleasure to have you here, by the way. Be nice.
Well, thank you, Mark. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Where are we exactly? Where am I?
Well, where you are is a secret little enclave that I keep. This is the back of the bar room. We are in the Oriental Saloon in Tombstone, Arizona. We're sitting under the balcony at the back of the room. And this is the spot where Doc Holliday deals faro.
Would this be the spot in the movie Tombstone, Doc, where Johnny Tyler was walked out by Wyatt Earp on his ear?
Just about. Right about where that wall corner is there would be where that faro table was sitting in the movie.
So we are on the corner of what? Fifth and Allen Street in Tombstone,
Fifth
correct?
And Allen Street, the deadliest intersection in the Old West, they call it, because so many shootings happened right there.
Okay. We are going to go in so many directions with you. Let me take this opportunity to thank you for being here. Obviously not the real Doc Holliday, but as close as you'll ever get. If you walk the streets, the dusty streets of Tombstone, Arizona, if you have in the past, you have likely seen my guest and maybe met my guest. He is an actor 35 years running and said to me right before we went live and made a living at it. Congratulations at that. I'm talking to Stephen Keith. It's a real pleasure to have you here. I met you here, I guess, right about the time. You've been in Tombstone how long, 10 years?
I've been here for 11 years now.
For 11 years. And you began playing the character, the Doc Holliday character, when?
Really, I suppose when I started coming here, I saw the town, and I kind of walked into town expecting subliminally, not realistically, that, of course, Val Kilmer would come walking down the street at some point. I walked out on Allen Street and was nearly creamed by a Harley Davidson instead. And
not unusual in this town. So, by the way, that's a great point. If you do hear them behind us, we are remote in Tombstone. You may hear the noise of the Harleys behind us. It's actually a beautiful sound, and remember that loud pipes save lives. Sorry, Stephen, go ahead.
Well, then why aren't all those gold wing riders dead already?
That's a great question. But back to you were here. You said you almost expected to see Val Kilmer. What drew you here when you first got here? What did you think? What threw your mind?
Well, actually, I came as a tourist. I was working at the Renaissance Festival up in Apache Junction, playing another one of my characters. And I came to Tombstone sort of expecting to walk back in time. Like, the Renaissance Fairs, when they started out, really were magical. It was called Interactive Theater. And if you go to the one in Sterling, New York, I think Gary Izzo is still the director there, and wrote the book on interactive theater. And it's just a magical environmental form of theater that's improvisation. It's improvisation in character and in costume. And it makes an environment where you walk in and feel like you walked back in time. I rather expected to find that in Tombstone. I didn't find it. I had pretty much given up on theater at that point. I was dealing blackjack and poker up in Cripple Creek, Colorado, and came down here and saw this opportunity to bring interactive theater to the Old West, as opposed to the historic hobby of cowboy reenactment, to make it an environmental theater instead. And I was inspired to do so. I came down here and I was here for a couple of years helping, you know, some of the groups that do shows and doing shows at the Tombstone Repertory Company over at Shefflin Hall, the original theater that we have over on Fremont Street. And eventually I realized that I wasn't going to get people to learn to do this, so I did it myself. I took over the OK Corral. I ran that show for 6 years and made it a magical experience.
And it was. Let me tell you from a tourist standpoint. I've been coming to this town since about 1994. I saw, like many people did, the movie Tombstone. I was aware of the history of Tombstone, and I had seen the Clementines and the gunfights at the OK Corral and, you know, all the BS that went with that. I knew they were not historically accurate for the most part. Tombstone, you know, you have to cram a lot of time into a two-hour movie, and they had fun with it. It was well done, and it was a fun movie to watch. I decided I was going to make a trip out here. I did. I've been back every year since. It fascinates me. From before you were out here on the street, you had really kind of a hodgepodge mix-up of individuals on the street that were doing a gunfight down the street from us here on Fifth, I think. What's it called over down here on the left?
Oh, that was Six Gun City.
Six Gun. Six Gun City was there. I came back one day and you were here and had an opportunity to meet you, and I saw a street performance that you and the rest of your troupe did that was absolutely amazing. Can you tell us about it?
Well, I get a lot of credit for inventing that. Of course, I did not. It goes back as far as theater. It's the circus parade that leads to the Big Top. What we did was we took the energy of the OK Corral, which is the big draw here, what everyone comes here for, and we took it down to the opposite end of the street. We started out in front of the Birdcage, and we brought the show out onto the street. What we did was little bits of theater vignettes along the way, and ended up with a moving show. We walked three blocks. All the tourists started being fascinated by what we did and walked with us. It was kind of a little trick I pulled. Have you ever watched a bunch of kids playing hacky sack?
Been a while, but actually, yes, I have.
And when you watch that, you realize there's another circle of people around them watching them do it because it's fascinating. They're all waiting for them to catch it, miss it. And I saw that and thought, that's a piece of theater I can use.
Great.
So what I did was I took a can of peaches, and I gave it to three guys dressed up as cowboys and young guys. I mean, these were guys in their 20s who actually looked the part. And they took this can of peaches, and they walked out in the middle of the street in front of the Birdcage. They'd open the can. They'd talk about, wow, look at this. Fruit comes in cans now, which was an innovation in the 1880s. And they'd eat the peaches, and then they'd invent the game of kick the can. And they'd start kicking that can back and forth like a hacky sack. Next thing you know, there's 100 people watching them.
Mm-hmm.
And we just moved that show down the street. Wyatt Earp came strutting up the street, acting like a grown-up, stepped on their can and smashed it and ruined all their fun, and started all the altercations. Then they would move down to the Oriental. Virgil would come running out of the Oriental with a shotgun and try to herd them down the street because these boys, they were wearing guns. And Virgil had an ordinance. You were not allowed to wear guns on the street in Tombstone.
Yeah, we're going to go there in a little bit. That's a fascinating thing a lot of people don't know about. And what they do know about it, they've been misled. So I'm glad you brought that up. But go ahead and continue, please.
Well, all right. From there, they would drive those cowboys down the street. And in front of Big Nose Kate's Saloon, there'd be a pause. They would stop, have a small confrontation with the Earps, and the prettiest, tiniest little saloon girl you ever saw came out that door and threw big old Ike Clanton out in the street right in the middle of it. And Ike would jump out there, and altercation started. The Cowboys went to the corral, and the Earps followed them down, took everybody with us, and started the show inside.
And you actually started the show inside the, what is the world-famous OK Corral. 32 seconds the gunfight lasted, right?
Something like that. I don't think anybody really put a stopwatch on it.
It was about in a little plot of land, a lot of people. We don't have enough time now, but when we come back, let's mention it. The OK Corral, let's bring that theater of the mind to life and tell people what the real OK Corral is really like. Because
right.
We get a lot of misperception there, too. Hey, it didn't happen there. It happened at Fly's Photography Studio. You're going to set us straight. Armed American Radio continues the Daily Defense Hour here from the streets of Tombstone with Doc Holliday, a.k.a. Stephen Keith. We'll be right back.
I don't think I need to tell you this, but I'm going to anyway. When it comes to concealed carry, a smart shooter is a prepared shooter. And going to the range and shooting at a target just isn't enough. While training is important, you need something more. And that's why 135,000 responsibly armed Americans rely on Concealed Carry magazine. To pick up where training at the range leaves off, expect life-saving information on every page, every issue. Whether it's unbiased gun and gear reviews or real stories of self-defense, from real people who carry concealed every day. You'll stay up to date on the latest training drills and laws regarding your right to carry your firearm. And for a limited time, when you start your subscription, you'll automatically be entered to win one of four brand new guns. But this won't last long. So go to the number one of the number four guns.com right now to begin your subscription and claim your chance to win your dream gun. That's one of four guns.com.
The Second Amendment Foundation has grown into what many believe to be the most important gun rights organization in America. With hundreds of thousands of active members, it is the Second Amendment Foundation defending your rights in courtrooms across the nation. Winning these battles in local jurisdictions all the way to the Supreme Court requires tireless effort and help from you. Please help the Second Amendment Foundation defend your freedoms by joining or donating today at saf.org. Join us at saf.org. Thank you.
The Super Tuck by Crossbreed Holsters, the most comfortable and concealable holster available on the market today. Is it any wonder why it's the most copied design on the planet? Used by law enforcement and civilians around the world, the Super Tuck by Crossbreed is adjustable for ride depth and cant. Often imitated, but never duplicated, the Super Tuck holster is available for a wide variety of popular carry guns. For more information and to order your Super Tuck, visit CrossbreedHolsters.com. That's CrossbreedHolsters.com.
Carrying spare magazines is always a great idea. The Crossbreed holster outside the waistband mag carrier is the most comfortable OWB rig on the market today. The Crossbreed mag carrier provides great retention and a high ride, enabling total concealment and immediate access under only a light cover garment. Available for single or dual magazines, these incredibly comfortable magazine carriers may just save your life one day. Crossbreed holsters, often imitated but never duplicated. To order your Crossbreed mag carrier, visit CrossbreedHolsters.com. That's CrossbreedHolsters.com.
Hi, it's Mark, and I hope you're enjoying this week's broadcast. You know, over the last several weeks, you've heard me mentioning a website, usccaonair.com. We have some amazing sponsors here on this program, and one of them, the United States Concealed Carry Association, helped create this program. Since that time, just like Armed American Radio, the USCCA has exploded in growth to become the nation's number one resource for the responsibly armed citizen. The USCCA has also become famous for their promotions, as if you needed more incentive to join the United States Concealed Carry Association. Free guns, thousands of dollars in merchandise, and free ammunition, etc. to lucky promotion winners. You, too, can win by simply visiting the website usccaonair.com. usccaonair.com. That site is reserved for you as an Armed American Radio listener to keep you updated on their latest promotions. Now, I'll tell you about the promos on every program, but you can still check for yourself by visiting usccaonair.com. Don't miss out. Hi, it's Mark, and I have a plea for help. Gun-hating billionaire Michael Bloomberg is up to his bag of tricks by funding studies designed to fool the American public into thinking your guns cause crime. As expected, the media plays right along. Unfortunately for him, John Lott and the Crime Prevention Research Center does the real research to measure the true impact of guns on crime. But we need your help to do it. Please donate today to help John and the CPRC get the truth out. Visit crimeresearch.org, crimeresearch.org to donate. Crimeresearch.org. Thank you.
Right now, it's time for Armed American Radio's Daily Defense with Mark Walters.
Back in these Crossbreed Holster studios, these studios have been mobile for the past couple of months. I am standing in what was the Oriental Saloon back in the late 19th century here in Tombstone, Arizona. An amazing place if you've never been, if the Old West history fascinates you. This is a living, breathing museum. This is a real town. And I am talking with, I say Doc Holliday, because that's how I've always known you for all the years I've been here and got to know you. I said some of the best radio I tell listeners, Stephen, is the radio they never get to hear. And that's the conversations that we have off air. And I want to bring that to life right now with you, because we were going to go into the OK Corral, which we absolutely have to do. But let's paint the theater of the mind, which is radio, something you know something about. The Oriental at 5th and Allen. Describe where we are, its importance, its relevance, its history. I look outside this window right here from where Doc Holliday used to actually deal faro here. There's a faro table right here next to us. We'll go there in a few minutes, too. And I'm looking over at the epitaph. What is the epitaph?
Well, now the epitaph, back then there was a little theater there, actually. It was called the, I don't remember now, Jubilee Theater, something like that. The epitaph office was actually over on 4th and Fremont at the time. It's no longer there. What the epitaph was the newspaper of Tombstone. Because of the convoluted way that we got the name Tombstone for the town, somebody decided to start a newspaper. I believe it was John Clum. And he said every tombstone should have an epitaph. So that's what he named the newspaper. And it was, of course, the most perfect name for a newspaper.
A perfect
town ever had.
It is actually, if I'm not mistaken, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, it is the longest running paper, I believe, in America. Is that true? Founded in 1880?
It is the longest running newspaper in Arizona. I would be surprised if it went back further than New York papers.
But yes, it's with the same name. I'll have to go back and look at the history. There's fascinating history, and we're here looking at that. And that is on, the back end of the world-famous Crystal Palace Saloon, which is where we were yesterday. That sits catty-corner across from Big Nose Kate Saloon, also world-famous, which used to be the Grand Hotel, correct?
It was the Grand Hotel, and the bar was actually in the basement. Where you go in now was a hotel lobby. Down in the basement was a bar, and the miners would come up the mine shaft right into the bar because there's an access to the mines right there. So they didn't get very far with what they high-graded. They came up, spent it on whiskey before they even saw daylight.
I imagine there's probably some people in Tombstone still do that, don't they?
Well, they say some of those miners are still down there walking around.
It is haunted down there. I've had some great conversations with some of the people that work in that, which is now, of course, the gift shop down below, Big Nose Kate Saloon. The history of the town is fascinating. As we go farther down the street, we begin to get closer and closer to the OK Corral. The OK Corral sits adjacent to Fly's Photography Studio, world-famous Fly's Photography, where we saw a lot of tintypes come out, including photographs of a famous photograph of Josephine Marcus Earp, who later became Wyatt's wife later in life. Well, tell us a little bit about how this all came about.
Actually, first, a technical point. Tintypes were extinct by then. It was black and white photography
on
paper. Tintypes were more Civil War era. So this is 20 years later and progressed through the science of photography. C.S. Fly was a professional photographer. He came here. His wife, Molly Fly, actually ran the studio and did the portrait work that you see. C.S. Fly did a lot of field work. He took all the famous pictures of General Crook and Geronimo and the surrender of the Apache Indians and all that. So he was doing field photography that you still see in every... you can buy T-shirts in Washington, D.C. with C.S. Fly's photos on them. And Molly ran the studio right there. She ran a boarding house, and she also took portrait pictures in the back in the little photo studio there. So she did most of that. There's a good picture of her down there with her two hound dogs that are in the place where she actually worked. C.S. Fly's was also a boarding house. And Doc's girlfriend, Big Nose Kate, had a room right there in the corner room of Fly's studio and boarding house. And she looked out her window right onto a vacant lot. And that vacant lot is a controversial piece of real estate in the West. That is the place where the gunfight began. A lot of people will say the gunfight happened there. What really happened was the first gunshot made everybody scatter just like a real gunfight. So The gunfight began in that vacant lot right outside the back gate of the OK Corral. There's another point of contention. Everyone thinks they have to debunk the movies and tell you the gunfight didn't really happen in the OK Corral. Well, I've never heard anybody say gunfight in the OK Corral.
Great point. It's at
the OK Corral. Right outside the back gate. As a matter of fact, locally and colloquially, that vacant lot was known as the backyard of the OK Corral. And if you came into town from the north, you rode into the OK Corral that way. So a lot of people just live for debunking the movies. And I have to point out to them that both movies recently said the vacant lot behind the OK Corral. They don't even say it anymore. So they're debunking the movies for no reason.
Okay. So it actually, it happened right there.
And further, that vacant lot is now contained within the OK Corral. So don't be confused by the people who tell you it didn't really happen there. Go in the OK Corral and ask them.
Okay.
Because it really is in the OK Corral now. The OK Corral now encompasses the Harwood House on the corner and the vacant lot and Fly's studio. All of those are within the confines of the OK Corral now. So don't let people in this town tell you that in where it is. Go in there and ask them.
Yeah, that's great advice, and I actually have, and it's fascinating. It's something, if you've never been here, if you've thought about it, if you're driving Interstate 10 in either direction to or from California, make the trip down Route 80, which is Fremont Street when you get to Tombstone. So when you're telling me that when we come down Fremont, when 80 turns into Fremont Street here, and we see the OK Corral on the right-hand side, that's really where it happened, right?
As a matter of fact, there's a gate there, and right behind that gate is where the vacant lot was. There was no gate there at the time. There was a board across a running ditch of water at the time it happened. Remember, the weather was pretty bad that day. It was cold and blowing sleet and rain, and that's why they were wearing those long black coats that we have to wear in the middle of August now because of that one day's image.
Yeah, there you go. That's, you said something. There's a fascinating piece I read from the Washington Post earlier today. The piece was written in 2012, and it's one of the best pieces regarding the history of this town. And you were quoted extensively through the piece as the man interviewed you. You told a funny story. We'll close out this segment as we get ready to go to a break. I asked your family, and you know, how did your family feel? How'd they find out you were here? And you told a great story about your sister.
Well, my family knew I was doing theater everywhere. My sister happened to be in Tucson for another reason and called my mother up and said, I just saw my brother on a billboard. I still have not seen the billboard, but evidently my picture was up on a billboard advertising Tombstone in Tucson.
Okay.
And she saw that and said, that's my brother, to my little nieces who were with her at the time.
Well, I'm going to assume that was somewhere up on Interstate 10 as people were heading out of it, either into or out of Tucson.
Yeah, she said in Tucson, so
okay.
I actually never saw it.
Well, again, I'll make the assumption that you were probably dressed in the period clothing. You were dressed in Sock Holiday. And you do a just an absolutely incredible spitting image, sound, look, feel, everything, the entire flavor of Doc Holliday you brought to life from the Val Kilmer perspective, correct?
Why, whatever do you mean?
I have no idea. I'll be right back with Doc Holliday here in Tombstone at the Oriental Saloon right after this. Don't go away. This is too much fun.
As people who carry a gun for protection, you and I both know if we're ever forced to pull that trigger, you know your life will change instantly. Liberal prosecutors, bleeding heart juries, they'd love to make examples of people like you and me. And that's why I rely on the legal and financial backup plan with my membership in the United States Concealed Carry Association, the USCCA. They have a guide that will arm you with 18 proven strategies for effective self-defense, helping you stay out of jail, out of bankruptcy, court, and home with your family if you're forced to defend your loved ones with a gun. So if you go to defendfamily.com right now, you can download this free concealed carry guide from my friends at the USCCA. Now, the guide is 100% free, and the 18 strategies it contains could very well save your life. Simply visit defendfamily.com, download your 100% free guide, defendfamily.com. Again, that's defendfamily.com.
Has this ever happened to you? You walk into a gun store, and by the time you walk out, you feel about 3 inches tall.
All because the guy behind the counter made you feel like an idiot. Just because you didn't know some of the special gun terminology or what the latest product was. Well, let Concealed Carry Magazine be your crash course on everything and anything armed self-defense. So the next time you walk into that gun store, you'll walk out with your head held high. As soon as your first issue arrives, you'll find yourself immersed in unbiased gun and gear reviews and real stories from real people who carry concealed every day. You'll quickly realize Concealed Carry Magazine isn't your cookie-cutter publication, but in fact, it's a wealth of vital information you need to stay up to date and prepared. As a special bonus, if you activate your subscription today, you'll be entered to win one of four brand new handguns. Simply go to oneofourguns.com right now to activate your subscription and secure your entry to win. Hurry though, this offer won't last long. That's the number one of the number four guns.com.
Known as a bad to the bone fighter with a rebel soul and a rock and roll attitude, the Roadhouse from Emerson Knives is destined to be a classic. Designer Ernest Emerson says the Roadhouse is one of his best designs ever. Just like a chopped Harley, it's low slung and ready to roar. It feels like you've just dropped the clutch and it's ready to jump out of your hand. The Roadhouse from Emerson Knives is a must-have tactical folder. Visit EmersonKnives.com. That's EmersonKnives.com.
One of the few guns that fits comfortably in your pocket, the North American Arms Guardian 32 ACP is the perfect combination of small size, high quality, and great stopping power. Convenient, reliable, and very effective. North American Arms stands behind the Guardian 32 ACP with a lifetime warranty. With standard capacity of 6 plus 1 rounds in a pistol less than 4 inches in length, the Guardian ACP ships with two magazines and offers an optional 10-round capacity extended magazine. For more information, visit NorthAmericanArms.com. That's NorthAmericanArms.com.
Hi, it's Mark, and I hope you're enjoying this week's broadcast. You know, over the last several weeks, you've heard me mentioning a website, usccaonair.com. We have some amazing sponsors here on this program, and one of them, the United States Concealed Carry Association, helped create this program. Since that time, just like Armed American Radio, the USCCA has exploded in growth to become the nation's number one resource for the responsibly armed citizen. The USCCA has also become famous for their promotions, as if you needed more incentive to join the United States Concealed Carry Association. Free guns, thousands of dollars in merchandise, and free ammunition, etc. to lucky promotion winners. You, too, can win by simply visiting the website usccaonair.com. usccaonair.com. That site is reserved for you as an Armed American Radio listener to keep you updated on their latest promotions. Now, I'll tell you about the promos on every program, but you can still check for yourself by visiting usccaonair.com. Don't miss out.
Back to Armed American Radio's Daily Defense with Mark Walters.
Welcome back to the Tombstone, Arizona Crossbreed Holster Studios. What a great time we are having here today in the town Too Tough to Die. An amazing place. If you've never been here, make it a point to come here. It's just off of Route 80, south of Tucson, not far from Interstate 10. You've got to make the trip if you're coming out. It's an absolutely wonderful time for the family. It's living, breathing American Western history. You will have a great time. One other thing before we go back to Doc Holliday, a.k.a. Stephen Keith, and that is USCCA On Air. USCCA On Air, a gun a day giveaway through the month of October. We are now 7 hours, 25 minutes, and 29 seconds away from today's gun closing out. And this gun, I'm looking at it right now, is absolutely beautiful. It's a version of one that I have. It's a Smith & Wesson M&P Pro Series center-ported pistol with an MSRP, for all of you dopey liberals, that means manufacturer's suggested retail price, of $812. Head over to USCCA On Air. It's real easy to get in on it. All you have to do is activate a membership. Our listeners are winning these promotions, and we'll give you some names after this promotion ends and maybe bring one of them back on air again. I am at the Oriental Saloon, the back of the Oriental Saloon, what was the Oriental Saloon, very famous. Was it a hotel also or just the saloon?
No, the Oriental was just a saloon. It was this section. The building has three sections, and the first one on the corner was the Oriental Saloon.
Okay.
The other two were shops of some sort. And they had food. They had mixed drinks. They had ice in the drinks back then. You can still see the rusty compressor out in the back that
wow, no kidding.
Made the ice. and they had exotic drinks. They probably had more kinds of drinks than you can find in a saloon in California now.
You know, it's a fascinating story. Let's take you here. Why don't you take us? I love the theater of the mind with you here today. Let me tell you briefly who I'm talking with. Stephen King. That just kind of came out of nowhere, huh? Stephen Keith. It was close.
It's okay, I am a writer, right? But
I'm talking with Stephen Keith. 35 years, and I say actor, theater actor. 35 years in theater. It's quite an accomplishment, and many years spent right here portraying Val Kilmer's adaptation is probably.
I would say yes, Val Kilmer's version of Doc Holliday, because that is what resonates. That's what the tourists are looking for. You find a lot of people who try to promulgate the argument of history versus Hollywood,
right.
And it's really the just dumbest thing. This town grew up with Hollywood, and Hollywood grew up with Tombstone. This town has been depicted in Hollywood movies almost since Hollywood started.
Right.
So in a very real sense, Hollywood is our history. This town is here because Wyatt Earp lived long enough to work in Hollywood. And he did. He worked on movie sets as an advisor and complained that no one listened to him because he was probably the first one to start this whole history versus Hollywood argument.
Wyatt wanted to tell them
how it really happened, and they went and filmed whatever they want.
That's exactly what they did. Great point. He complained a lot about that later on in his life as well, and then he stopped discussing it. One interesting piece, Wyatt Earp lived until when?
1929.
Okay, so he lived to the ripe old age of 80-something, 80-plus.
Just about 81, yeah.
Just about 81 years old. And, you know, it's hard to think of about it in these terms, but try to wrap your head around it. Where we're sitting and what happened here was not that long ago. My grandfather on my mother's side was born in 1895. So when you put this in perspective, it really wasn't that long ago.
Well, you want to hear the real perspective. There are gentlemen in this town portraying Wyatt Earp who were born while he was still living.
Isn't that fascinating? Okay, that's fascinating.
This is a big retirement hobby place.
Yeah, it is. In fact, we had some great insight from you about some of the townspeople around. Let's talk about how this town actually got here. In and of itself, absolutely fascinating. I've always said that Tombstone is a town that was built on the gun. It relied on the gun. It depended on the gun. And it had a lot of its demise because of the gun, and its reputation because of the gun, both positive and negative. Ed Shiflin, tell us about Ed Shiflin, where he came from, and why this town is where it is, and why it's called Tombstone. Fascinating.
All right. Well, around us is what's called the Tombstone Hills. What happened is Ed Shiflin was based out of Camp Huachuca, which is now Fort Huachuca, a big military base about 25 miles from here. And Shiflin was prospecting. He was out in the desert looking for rock.
He came from Illinois, though, correct? Found his way out here,
I believe he did.
Okay.
But he was based out of Fort Huachuca, and he was looking for rock. That's how the miners said it back then. I'm going to go. I'm looking for rock. What he was looking for was gold and silver, any precious metal. And he would say, I'm going to go out there and see if I can find some rock. Well, some soldier at Huachuca told him the only rock you're going to find out there is your tombstone, because this was infested with Apaches. This place was full of the bad kind of Indian, the kind that kill you and then don't even think about it. And that was the reputation of the area. The Apaches had a very warlike reputation under Cochise and later under Geronimo. And
yeah, they were not pleased with the westward
Vittorio.
Expansion of the white men at that time.
Well, they were not. And there was a lot of other things going on as well. But that was the thing. They told him the only rock you're going to find out there is your tombstone. He struck silver right out here about two blocks from here. And, of course, thinking a sense of humor, he said, I'm just going to call it the Tombstone Mine.
That's what he put on the claim, isn't
it? That's what he put on the claim, because somebody told him the only rock you're going to find is your tombstone. So he said, I found it all right. And he named the place Tombstone.
Success is the greatest revenge. I love it.
The town grew up around it, and the name stuck, and, of course, the epitaph was put on it, and there you have it. Tombstone is here, and there was other things going on out here before Tombstone. There was an international incident brewing on the border, what is known as the Cowboy Gang. Now, they were Texas cowboys, but all the Texas cowboys were pretty much Confederate soldiers who had gone out to Texas to get away from Reconstruction. And Texas cowboys came here secondary, They were stealing cattle in Mexico. They were rustling lots of cattle, bringing them north of the border and selling them off, you know, herding them up to where they could sell beef. And the Mexican government had a big problem with this. They had a big problem, and Chester Arthur had a big problem. He was president of the United States at the time. He couldn't really do anything about it, because while General Sherman was out here with the army, the Posse Comitatus Act forbade the United States Army from acting as a police force within the United States, especially if the crimes were committed in Mexico. So the international incident brewing between Mexico and the United States because of depreting the border was brewing up on Chester Arthur pretty badly. He did not want another war. The cowboys were also piping money off to Austin, Texas, where there was a Confederate revival brewing. And that was right at the same time. Well, of course, they didn't want another civil war, but the Confederate revival people did. And he decided he had to put somebody on the problem down here. He picked Crawley Dake, who was the U.S. Marshal for the territory based out of Prescott, Arizona. Crawley Dake had to have some people down here.
The territory being the Arizona Territory.
Right.
Okay.
And he had to have some people down here on the border to monitor what was going on, find out what was, you know, what the outlaw gang was up to. And who better than a couple of retired law enforcement officers who decided they were going to come down here and not be law enforcement anymore. They were suddenly going to run gambling in the Oriental Saloon and the Crystal Palace Saloon. And one of them was Wyatt Earp. He said he was going into business and giving up law enforcement, but what better place to be undercover and listen to the cowboy gang than this saloon? This was the cowboy gang hangout. This is where Johnny Tyler held forth. And Wyatt,
and you're talking about here, where we're sitting, right here in the Oriental.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and Wyatt came here, and he became the a partner in the gambling operation here. And his brother Virgil actually became the acting town marshal for a little while, and a U.S. marshal. Although I am told neither Wyatt nor Virgil appear in the archives of the U.S. Marshal Service, so this was plausible deniability long before Richard Nixon thought of it.
Fascinating. Doc Holliday, you're going to stick with us for the remaining segment. Say
yes.
When. How did I do?
I'll be here till the bitter end.
You're going to be my huckleberry. We'll be right back with Doc Holliday, a.k.a. Stephen Keith, here in the Oriental Saloon in Tombstone, Arizona, at the corner of 5th and Allen. Come check it out. It's the real deal. We'll be right back.
You and I both know concealed carry is a serious subject, and being prepared to protect your family when it matters most means more than just being a good shot at the range. And that's why 135,000 of your fellow responsibly armed Americans already read Concealed Carry Magazine from cover to cover, including my columns. A subscription to Concealed Carry Magazine isn't just an entire year of unbiased gun and gear reviews. It's so much more. It's real stories from real people who carry concealed every single day, just like you and I. It's life-saving information that'll keep you up to date and prepared, and most importantly, it'll help you be ready and confident to protect your family if you're ever faced with a life or death situation. Begin your subscription today, and not only will you be looking forward to a full year of America's number one publication for responsibly armed citizens, but you'll also automatically be entered to win one of four brand new guns. But this offer won't last long, so go to oneofourguns.com. That's the number one and the number four, oneofourguns.com, to activate your subscription and claim your chance to win your dream gun. Again, that's oneofourguns.com.
Carrying spare magazines is always a great idea. The Crossbreed holster outside the waistband mag carrier is the most comfortable OWB rig on the market today. The Crossbreed mag carrier provides great retention and a high ride, enabling total concealment and immediate access under only a light cover garment. Available for single or dual magazines, these incredibly comfortable magazine carriers may just save your life one day. Crossbreed holsters, often imitated but never duplicated. To order your Crossbreed mag carrier, visit crossbreedholsters.com. That's crossbreedholsters.com.
The Super Tuck by Crossbreed Holsters, the most comfortable and concealable holster available on the market today. Is it any wonder why it's the most copied design on the planet? Used by law enforcement and civilians around the world, the Super Tuck by Crossbreed is adjustable for ride depth and cant, often imitated but never duplicated. The Super Tuck holster is available for a wide variety of popular carry guns. For more information and to order your Super Tuck, visit crossbreedholsters.com. That's crossbreedholsters.com.
The Second Amendment Foundation has grown into what many believe to be the most important gun rights organization in America. With hundreds of thousands of active members, it is the Second Amendment Foundation defending your rights in courtrooms across the nation. Winning these battles in local jurisdictions all the way to the Supreme Court requires tireless effort and help from you. Please help the Second Amendment Foundation defend your freedoms by joining or donating today at saf.org. Join us at saf.org. Thank you.
Hi, it's Mark, and I hope you're enjoying this week's broadcast. You know, over the last several weeks, you've heard me mentioning a website, usccaonair.com. We have some amazing sponsors here on this program, and one of them, the United States Concealed Carry Association, helped create this program. Since that time, just like Armed American Radio, the USCCA has exploded in growth to become the nation's number one resource for the responsibly armed citizen. The USCCA has also become famous for their promotions, as if you needed more incentive to join the United States Concealed Carry Association. Free guns, thousands of dollars in merchandise, and free ammunition, etc. to lucky promotion winners. You, too, can win by simply visiting the website usccaonair.com. usccaonair.com. That site is reserved for you as an Armed American Radio listener to keep you updated on their latest promotions. Now, I'll tell you about the promos on every program, but you can still check for yourself by visiting usccaonair.com. Don't miss out. Hi, it's Mark, and I have a plea for help. Gun-hating billionaire Michael Bloomberg is up to his bag of tricks by funding studies designed to fool the American public into thinking your guns cause crime. As expected, the media plays right along. Unfortunately for him, John Lott and the Crime Prevention Research Center does the real research to measure the true impact of guns on crime. But we need your help to do it. Please donate today to help John and the CPRC get the truth out. Visit crimeresearch.org, crimeresearch.org to donate. Crimeresearch.org. Thank you.
And now your host, Mark Walters.
From these Crossbreed Holster studios, sitting in the original site of the Oriental Saloon, a fascinating place, taking a walk back in time with a man who knows a little bit about it and has portrayed Doc Holliday here on the dusty streets of Tombstone, Arizona, for a number of years, and does a rendition of Val Kilmer's Doc Holliday that is absolutely second. You've got a lot of accolades from it. You've got a lot of national recognition because of your portrayal of Doc. I think back. I hate to date myself, but I think back in time. I have pictures of my kids with you when they were half. Amazing job, and I really appreciate you being here. I'm talking with Stephen Keith, 35 years actor. Do you call that is that character acting? What do you call that?
Well, I'm more of the classical. I started with Shakespeare. I do theater. I haven't done film. I did one little BBC film, mm-hmm. but not much. I really went on stage and just started loving theater and doing theater, and then I discovered way back in the early 80s the Renaissance Fairs, and that was a place to get paid for doing theater.
Ah, and that's the ultimate goal. That's, you found that you could make a living doing it.
And I did many years. Of course, the Renaissance Fairs kind of went volunteer over time, too, right. So I kind of drifted away from that. And I did more theater. I went up and took a job dealing blackjack in Cripple Creek, Colorado.
Now, that sounds very cool. That sounds very Doc Holliday-ish.
You think?
It does. So let's go to Doc Holliday. This is a fascinating character from the Old West. You know a little bit about him. You've studied him. You've portrayed him. In a quick nutshell, Doc Holliday, of course, was born in southern Georgia, was very close to his mother. His mother passed away when he was about 12 years old. He never really, it said, got over the death of his mother and became very angry at his father when, back in those days, his father wound up with another younger woman a little bit sooner than people liked to see back then. So there was a lot of accusations being tossed around.
As they say, the bed wasn't even cold yet.
That's pretty much what happened. The mourning period didn't last very long, and that upset him about his father. He then left home. He went to dental school, of course, in Pennsylvania, came back to the Atlanta area, began a practice. His mother passed away of tuberculosis at a very young age, correct?
His mother passed away very asymptomatically of something they put down as consumption, in quotes, put down as consumption. But really her only symptom that we know of was bleeding at the mouth, which could be anything up to and including a dental issue for all we know.
Then he became diagnosed with the same thing very early on in life. Is that right? Now, you're smiling, and I know why you're smiling. And I got to tell you, I'm going to have to – you've agreed to come back to the program to talk about this in greater detail. But in essence of time, we need to move. I hate to do it because I know – I would really like you to hear what Stephen has to say, but
let's just say he did a lot of things that a man with tuberculosis probably would not do. There are
definitely questions, and you know a little bit about it. For the historical record and what you probably know of Doc Holliday, he was then the theory or the story goes anyway that he was advised to go west, drier air, breathe a little better, possibly live a little bit longer. He found himself in Dallas, as you've mentioned, which is not a place with dry air.
No, the climate is almost exactly like that of South Georgia.
Very hot, very muggy, very thick, and very humid. He became famous after that. The meeting with Wyatt Earp occurred in Texas. Is he, let's let you take it from here, is he the gunfighter, is he the killer, is he the murderer we've come to know as Doc Holliday? Or has that been misrepresented?
No. As a matter of fact, it was misrepresented at the time, maybe intentionally by him, because his reputation sort of protected him. There are actually three incidents documented, and more anecdotally, but actually three times documented where he was in a gunfight and the gun was shot out of his adversary's hand. Whether or not he was actually the one that did that, at the OK Corral, the first shot went through Billy Clanton's gun wrist, and it looked like it was aimed at the gun. Before that, Milt Joyce, right here in the Oriental Saloon, took his gun away one night. Well, Doc left, came back with another one, a self-cocker, as they call it, which was a double action. And he came back in and shot his own gun out of Milt Joyce's hand behind the bar, and then shot a shot through the bar, which hit the other bartender in the toe.
Safe to say Doc Holliday was a crack shot, as he lived up to his reputation, right?
I'm thinking at least he tried to be. Right. Up in Leadville, Colorado, much later, Bill Allen came in on him in a bar room, and Doc shot the gun arm of Bill Allen. Like the bullet went up the gun arm, like he was shooting at the gun. For that to happen even just three times in one lifetime, the odds of it being an accident are astronomical. I think he was really that good. And as far as the other gunfights he was in, if somebody didn't die, maybe he wasn't trying to kill him. As far as we know, he only killed a few people, but his reputation for that was big. I mean, Tombstone is a place where a little story becomes a huge rumor, but it's not the only place. And Doc had that about him. He got that reputation. He also had a couple other weird little reputations that people don't remember. They said he had these ice blue eyes that if you looked in his eyes, it was otherworldly. It was almost like he was possessed by a demon. They also said he had a grip that could throttle an ox. He would shake hands and you knew your hand had been shook. And he was a slim, slight little man. Not short, but very slim, very thin. Didn't look like he had a lot of power, but he could
crush
your hand.
The rumor is he was a very frail, skinny guy, and you just made a great point, because he was sick. He was very sick. He passed away at a young age, 36 years old.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. This is another part of this conversation we want to have with you when we have more time. In a sanatorium in Colorado that was built...
Was built actually 1 year after he died in it. Yes, he supposedly died at the Glenwood Sanatorium. You can see it in all the movies in 1887. And in 1888, they went ahead and built that place. But then, of course, the stories change around. And they say he died at the Glenwood Hotel much later. And therefore, they can cover the story and say he died of tuberculosis there. But the stories keep not adding up around Glenwood Springs and around the tuberculosis thing.
Is he buried in Glenwood Springs?
Well, there's another place the stories go crazy. He's not buried in that cemetery under that tombstone. They say he may have been buried in the backyard of a house in Glenwood Springs to hide the body from bounty hunters who wanted that dead or alive reward.
Right.
They also say he was buried in the basement of a house in Glenwood Springs. The bounty hunters did bring him up. and packed the body in snow and ice to preserve it for recognition purposes, put him on a train, brought him back down here, and got that dead or alive reward, and Doc's buried out in the desert here. The true story, of course, is that the family came and got him, and Doc is buried in an unmarked grave in Griffin, Georgia, somewhere around Bill Dunn's Doc Holliday Museum out there. I don't know which one's true. All I know is all these stories are true, and they have eyewitnesses, every one of them.
It's a fascinating, I guess, confluence of events regarding how everyone met here. Some amazingly colorful figures in American Western folklore came through this town. You mentioned, was it Frank Leslie?
Buckskin Frank Leslie.
These were known killers of the time. In fact, right up at Boot Hill is a couple of graves, one or two graves, killed by Frank Leslie, I do believe that.
There are, but remember back then, you know, you could get a reputation for a killer for self-defense pretty quick. There was really no law out west of the Pecos.
I want to thank you for being here. We're getting ready to end this program, and I'm going to ask you on live radio right now. You're going to come back.
All right. Okay? Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We'll bring you to the Sunday show. We've got about 15 seconds. You've got a new business brewing right here in this room at the Oriental Saloon, right?
The Once and Future Doc Holliday Show. What I do is a one-man performance here in this room at the Faro table. And it is a quick run through Doc Holliday's life.
When you come to Tombstone, Arizona, come meet Doc Holliday, a.k.a. Stephen Keith. Stephen, thank you very, very much, man. I appreciate it.
Certainly,
great
Mark.
History lesson, an awful lot of fun. You've been listening to The Daily Defense. I'm Mark Walters, filling your prescription for freedom. Remember, carry on, carry often, carry absolutely everywhere. Never leave your cave without your club. Never let there be a gun-free zone wherever you are. I'll see you Sunday from Phoenix.
Known as a bad-to-the-bone fighter with a rebel soul and a rock and roll attitude, the Roadhouse from Emerson Knives is destined to be a classic. Designer Ernest Emerson says the Roadhouse is one of his best designs ever. Just like a chopped Harley, it's low-slung and ready to roar. It feels like you've just dropped the clutch and it's ready to jump out of your hand. The Roadhouse from Emerson Knives is a must-have tactical folder. Visit EmersonKnives.com. That's EmersonKnives.com.
Hey, what's up? It's AAR Shanto here. Every day you hear the passion that we have for freedoms here in America. I also have other passions, and every week you can check out what that passion is. I've started a new web series. Yes, believe it or not, with all the other things that I have going on, I went and did it. I started a web series, and I think you're going to like it. If you want to see one of my hobbies, all you got to do is check out irfnews.com. That's irfnews.com.
I don't think I need to tell you this, but I'm going to anyway. When it comes to concealed carry, a smart shooter is a prepared shooter. And going to the range and shooting at a target just isn't enough. While training is important, you need something more. And that's why 135,000 responsibly armed Americans rely on Concealed Carry magazine. To pick up where training at the range leaves off, expect life-saving information on every page, every issue. Whether it's unbiased gun and gear reviews or real stories of self-defense from real people who carry concealed every day. You'll stay up to date on the latest training drills and laws regarding your right to carry your firearm. And for a limited time, when you start your subscription, you'll automatically be entered to win one of four brand new guns. But this won't last long. So go to the number one of the number four guns.com right now to begin your subscription and claim your chance to win your dream gun. That's one of four guns.com.